Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, there is our benevolent Lord and Master, Jordan Raup.
Hello, thank you for the invite to the dinner party.
But of course, also accepting the invitation tonight, is a survivor from the post-apocalyptic wasteland known as... I can't even get through my own intro to you because I just can't stop laughing at me insulting your city. It is Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
How you doing?
I'm good.
The city is Pittsburgh in question for new listeners.
For any new listeners, yeah, I can't get enough of making fun of Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
You really can't.
I know. I'm not ashamed. I can't help it. Fallout 3 is to blame. Anyway... We are here today to talk about the new film from Karin Kusama, that is The Invitation. It is out in limited release and on VOD now. It is a claustrophobic little thriller that stars Logan Marshall Green from Prometheus.
Tom Hardy, right?
No. Yeah, not Tom Hardy in Prometheus. Alternately, not Scoot McNairy and not Guy Pearce in this film.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm still getting over the fact that there's actually a person, a famous person named Scoot McNairy.
We had a Skeet Ulrich for a while. So
that is true. That is true.
I don't see why we can't have a Scoot. Scoot McNairy. Anyway, so that's what we're here to talk about. Before we get into it, let me remind everyone that you can follow us on the Facebook and on the Twitter at Film Stage Show. We can also be found on iTunes, where you can leave us a comment and a rating, which we always enjoy. And you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. You can also find us on thefilmstage.com. These audio broadcasts are posted under the feature section. There you can leave us comments, which we will read and respond to. So that is that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much we could talk about. But let's all just take a silent moment to thank God that we actually today learned that the Criterion Collection is teaming with TCM to create a curated movie streaming service that, for an extra fee, will also allow you access streaming to the entire Criterion Collection.
Well, not the entire. The whatever's available to stream.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we sure about that?
Which is pretty extensive.
Well, that's still an extensive one.
Yeah, definitely. But there's films like, you know, The Thin Red Line or their new releases, like actually most Malick movies. And I think it just has to do with the rights. So whatever.
I think Brief Encounters just came out today, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's on.
It's their entire streaming library. They are no longer working with Hulu.
November, man. Hulu, how do they look into that?
Because
you look at the rest of their selections... It's like
they got Seinfeld in the last year, so they have that. That's about it.
Yeah, no, there was a big thing when Criterion said we're going to be solely Hulu because Netflix wasn't giving them their own space.
Because they were on Netflix very briefly.
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah, so speaking of TCM, do you guys know that there is a TCM cruise, like a classic movie cruise you can go on?
Mother of God, no, I did not.
The old lady in me is just so into it.
Amanda, I'm going to send you there and you can just do a daily podcast about the experience.
If you have the cash to send me on a TCM cruise.
Maybe they'll sponsor it. They could sponsor it.
Oh, yeah. TCM. I don't know where it even goes. Probably Alaska.
But anyway, that's apparently coming out later this year. The film Twitter was all... I'm sorry, a Twitter about it this morning.
It's cool because they have, Kino and Zeitgeist and all these other distributors are also on board. So it's going to be pretty epic to see everything all in one place.
The best, I assume.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing which podcasts I can score numerous 1 month trial periods off of, which is what I've done with MUBI for the longest time.
I gotta say, I just did I'm doing a 14-day trial with Shudder, and I'm just thinking I can't keep adding all of these streaming services. I have so many now. I don't need a separate horror movie one. And
that's like a real problem that's going to have to be addressed soon.
Right. There's a lot. There's way more than there should be. Oh, there's also Tubi. Have you guys heard of Tubi TV?
Nope.
It's free.
Oh, well, then I'm glad to have heard of it.
Yeah. My friend was showing it to me the other day. Anyway.
Well, there's stuff like CISO. There's Mubi, which I've had for a couple months, and I haven't watched a movie on it in a couple months. So
You guys have cable, too. I feel like in the next few years, there'll just be this tipping point where people realize there's no need for cable.
No, I don't have cable anymore.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting rid of mine because all I do is watch Golden Girls reruns. And that's
there's a dedicated Golden Girls.
I didn't realize that your husband had died and you'd become a widow.
He sometimes watches them with me.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
What were you saying, Jordan?
Well, there's an exclusive an app that's just Golden Girls. It's going to be $10 a month.
Well, shit.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I also...
Golden Girls Struck is the name of it.
Oh, my God. There's also... Well, I also just discovered that there's this really weird off-brand channel. It's like Laff, L-A-F-F, that shows Night Court reruns.
Oh, my God.
And Night Court is one of my most favorite TV shows of all time. And
that's
so...
Like when I found out that, like, Pivot or Ion or whatever would show nothing but Without a Trace...
Oh, no.
And I just, like, would fall into it without a trace hole. Anyway.
How do you guys have time for this? That's what I want to know.
I don't. Okay.
It's, like, 2 o'clock on a Saturday, and I'm wasted. That's how I made time for it.
Oh, God. 2 a.m., anyway. Brian?
What?
2 a.m.?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bleeding in from the Friday night before.
Okay.
No,
that's,
not 2
that's
p.m.
That's passable.
I'm not awake by 2 p.m. on a Saturday. Well, during the time when I would mainline without a trace. Life has changed since then. For the better. So that's all we wanted to talk about. There's been a bunch of other weird news, like Reebok releasing Ripley's shoes, but not having any in women's sizes.
Dude, I'm so glad I can wear an 8 in men's.
Can you really?
Oh, yeah. I'm a size 10.
Damn, you got a big foot.
Mm-hmm. You know what they say about women with big feet?
They can really wear men's size 8.
That's all I've heard so far.
Yeah, that's all I've got at the moment. But that's, we just wanted to throw that out there because I was psyched about it. And I'm going to miss my friends in the real world when that happens.
I thought you meant about the shoes. I was very confused for a second.
Now
so Filmstruck, yes.
Aside from like just the, I don't understand how any company can ever say, this thing we're doing is going to 100% exclude women, and then everyone else goes, yeah, that's still fine, right?
This shoe that this female protagonist wore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to make a line of Tinkerbell clothing, and it's only going to be for boys ages, like, 14 to 27. Like, what the hell?
Oh, really? I like that.
You would. All right. Anyway, so that's it. That's all the film news that's fit to print. Let's talk about The Invitation, the newest film from Karin Kusama. And I could name the people who are in it. Aside from Logan Marshall Green, I don't think anyone's going to really recognize anyone.
John Carroll Lynch, MVP.
John Carroll Lynch. Yeah, he's fun. Toby Huss is in this.
Yeah, Toby Huss, the B-movie horror actor of our generation. He's in a lot of like really bad horror movies. But he's also a really charismatic guy.
Yeah, no, he's great.
No, I love that we have him. I'm just saying that that's kind of what he is now.
He's a very weird actor. Every time I see him, I'm like, "Oh, I know him. He's that weird guy."
Yeah.
We also have Tammy Blanchard, who I know I have seen in things, but ugh. God, if I can't remember what it is. Apparently, Moneyball, Blue Jasmine.
What?
Who knows?
She kind of reminds me of that woman who was on SNL, and then she was on Happy Endings. Do you know who I'm talking about? The dark-haired woman?
No, absolutely no idea.
The comedian.
Before we jump into the trailer, I will say, I don't know how to say his name. Michael Houseman?
Oh, the sex idiot from Game of Thrones?
That I was going to say Sonny from Tremé, but I guess that just lets you know where our tastes land. And he's not a sex idiot on Game of Thrones. He's
a
sellsword who pledged himself to Khaleesi.
I actually know him best from The Age of Adeline, a great underrated film.
Oh my god, that's right. He was in Age of Adeline.
Yeah.
He was apparently also in World War Z. But I know him best as Sonny from Treme. He was addicted to heroin. He was an okay keyboard player. And my favorite character on that show, Treme, HBO. Mm. Look it up. Anyway, here, after a lot of mincing, is the trailer.
God, this thing is so official.
Maybe they're overcompensating. It's kind of hard to call everybody up out of the blue after 2 years.
I'm so glad you're here. We've got a lot to talk about. So much to celebrate tonight. Each and every one of us is on a journey, and we feel that it's important to be on that journey with the people you love.
So this is a film that's going to raise some questions about what constitutes a spoiler. So I'll just I'll say a very light introduction to what the plot nominally is, and we'll try to keep it to that and general thoughts. And then we'll jump into spoilers, I feel, pretty quickly. So this is about... I'm sorry, Amanda, were you going to mumble something?
Oh, I just said, mm-hmm, I was agreeing.
Oh, okay, it was an agreement mumble.
Yes.
So this is the story of Will and Kira, a couple who are going to a dinner party thrown by Will's ex-wife, Eden, and her new husband, David, who have come back from 2 years out in the Mexican wilderness... and are getting the band back together, figuratively. There is no music in this. It is all their old friends, and they're all just going to have a nice, normal dinner party. Or are they?
Spoilers, it's not normal.
You know what, Brian? You said you wouldn't spoil it.
I know. I shouldn't have said, or are they? This is a real My Dinner with Andre. It's just a bunch of people having conversations and eating food. No, immediately suffused with a atmosphere of both tension and uncertainty. The invitation unspools over a fateful night when all these people meet. Secrets divulged, feelings shouted. We are talking about this primarily because, Amanda, you saw this.
Yes.
And we're all like, did anyone else see this? I need to talk this thing out.
So yeah.
You're going to start.
Go ahead. Well, because I knew nothing about this movie. I mean, I saw, you know, because I'm on film Twitter, I always see some talk about pretty much every movie that's out. And there was some buzz about this movie, but two of my friends watched it and they really liked it and they were talking about it on Facebook. And so my husband and I just randomly decided, you know, why not? We'll check it out. And I was just riveted the entire time. It's, I would say this is a very early candidate for one of my favorite films of this year. It is, and I think what I really liked about it, I don't know, do you want me to just go into my review? Like
yes,
straight up?
That's oh. what we're doing here.
I don't know, I just want to know.
Yeah, no, I mean, okay. Yeah, give us your review.
Yeah, I just didn't know if you wanted to know like how I got interested in, but yeah, it is, it's.
If that's going to help your review, then yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know.
No, it's been all over film Twitter. There was a big, I think it was a BuzzFeed article about Karin Kusama.
Yeah.
Who kind of hit the scene hard with Girl Fight and then sort of petered out.
Well, she did, what was the, Jennifer's Body.
Aeon Flux and then Jennifer's Body.
Oh, right, Aeon Flux.
I will say, Aeon Flux looks, Aeon Flux is a weird bird. I don't know. It's... I don't think it's a necessarily unsuccessful film. It's just Aeon Flux is such an odd thing to adapt into a film. I don't know.
I didn't even know what it was before.
She openly talks about how the movie was taken away from her and re-edited and changed things. Yeah.
Have you ever watched the... Because I used to watch... I think it was called Liquid Television when I was in high school, where they used to... It was before anime was everywhere, but it was like you could only watch anime on TV if it was on... Liquid Television, and it was like Aeon Flux was on there and the Max. I loved the Max. So I would watch the Max and then watch Aeon Flux. And it's a very bleak, hard, kind of like hard sci-fi animated series. I feel like that was just a no-win for her no matter what. I actually think the film looks amazing, but I
People consider it this like massive bomb, but it made over $50 million, which there's been so many worse bombs. I mean, it cost $65 million, but still, I mean, that's not.
Oh, yeah. You know. Comparatively. Yeah.
Comparatively, it's not too bad.
Yeah. So this film, because this is very different from from Aeon Flux and Jennifer's Body, of course. It is so strange because you go into it and it is kind of a perfect LA thriller in the sense that I think it really captures just how kind of, I think there's been a thing where it used to be LA was sort of depicted as being this sort of like sinister place for a long time in films. And then that sort of fell off. And then a lot of films just mocked LA. And now it's going back to depicting LA as depicting LA as a very sinister place.
The vampire evolution type of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I like that because it kind of, another example would be Starry Eyes, that movie that came out, I think last year, which
that was big on Netflix.
I wasn't crazy about it, but I think it really fits here. But also another reason I think it's a perfect LA thriller is because there's some great homage to past thrillers. There is just a scene where, like, when Eden descends the staircase and she's wearing that beautiful dress.
Oh, man.
And
I was going to say, wow, we really disagree about that dress.
Oh, I think that dress is gorgeous.
Jordan, thoughts on the dress?
What?
I mean, it's fine. It's.
Oh, I would wear that dress so hard.
I might not wear it, but.
I wouldn't wear it. I mean, obviously. But I also don't. I mean, who am I to tell a woman what to wear? But I would never want anyone that I know to wear that dress.
Listen, Brian. It is. Yeah. I thought that dress is gorgeous. And when she descends the stairs and comes down into the party and it's how she's introduced, it was like.
Yes, that's a great scene. Yeah.
It's a great scene. And it just reminded me so much of Barbara Stanwyck's introduction in Double Indemnity, where it's this beautiful but obviously very dangerous woman. I just think that the way that they pulled that off was so excellent. And this, I kind of stay away from using any cliches in the way I describe movies, but I have to say this movie is like electric. There is definitely this insane, and from the very beginning, there is this undercurrent of electricity that just intensifies as the film moves, and it is just beyond palpable. Like there were times when we were watching it where nothing was necessarily happening, because it is really just a movie about a bunch of people sitting around this amazing looking house in LA that in actually overlooks LA. So there's this great scenery. There's these beautiful shots of scenery and like, just, but it is just, and you're questioning whether or not there is something actually going on, because you start to find out that the background between what is the divorced couple's name? Eden and David?
Will is her original husband, who is the protagonist of the film.
Okay, Will, that's right. I watched this a while ago, so I'm trying to remember who everybody is.
Oh, it's totally fine if you don't remember character names. It's super difficult to follow character names in this film.
Because there's nine
like
people?
20 people at this point.
I will just say when who's the guy from Zodiac shows up, you know that it's not going to end well.
No, I don't think that guy has ever been a
Pruitt.
Good person.
Yeah, I think he played Drew Carey's brother.
That's still Drew Carey not series. A good person.
No. But anytime he shows up in a movie, I'm like, oh, it's something weird is going to happen. So there's definitely something weird going on, like you said, because they're acting very odd. They're just acting like really intense and really lovey-dovey. And they're saying, oh, we're so glad to have all of our friends here at this dinner party. We just want to share everything with you. And so But you're kind of wondering, because you start finding out the background between Eden and Will, and you find out that they had a child who died in a freak accident, and she couldn't deal with it, and he kind of moved on from it. And the way she dealt with it was she went on this excursion to Mexico and met this guy, and then they got married, and 2 years later she just pops up again. And it's just, I think what this film does is that it's so amazing at building tension, but at the same time it does such a good job at sort of revealing just with its character development and sort of like revealing little by little the character backgrounds and their motivation, and just making you question whether or not this sinister thing is going on. So we can maybe cover it more in spoilers, because I feel like if I talk anymore, I'm going to probably say something.
Yeah, you're getting close.
I'm getting close. I'm trying not to. I'm like teetering on the edge. But yeah, I just think that it is such a, this is one of the most like, I mean, there were times during this movie where I had to take a breath, and I was kind of like, you know that thing where you shake your hands and you're just kind of like, ooh, like I was just kind of like, oh my God, what's happening? It's so strange, because it really just is these people sitting in this house getting ready to have dinner. And yeah, it's incredible. It's definitely one of my favorite films this year.
All right, Jordan Raup, what did you think of The Invitation?
Yeah, so
this invitation?
No, I accepted it, yes. not The Invitation in the film, but the film The Invitation.
But you would go to that house.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I thought that back when I saw it in The Gift, so...
Oh, is that the same house from The Gift?
I don't know if it's the same house, yeah, but it's definitely one. Like same neighborhood and probably same architect.
Yeah,
like you can't deny that style of house with the where you kind of like are on a hill, and you got your little private driveway, and there's just trees everywhere, and you're looking out over the hills.
It's so beautiful.
You got a pool.
Mm-hmm. It's so incredible.
But yeah, movies have taught me that nothing good ever happens in those houses.
No, absolutely not. Which is
well, speaking of, I was going to say, so it's kind of a disservice to this movie, but I could not help but think of Coherence pretty much. Yes. This whole movie. And dude, I will say I like the mystery of Coherence much more than the mystery here.
No, this movie is like The Gift and Coherence, and well, I don't. I'll say what the other thing it's like,
yeah, later.
Because, but yeah, yeah. I mean,
right?
No, so, it definitely has that feel.
So yeah, for me, I think I definitely liked it for sure. And I think when things get crazy, which we can talk about, I think it does a great job of. You know, really messing with your mind about what's going on. But for me, I think she kind of played her later hand too early in terms of setting a certain tone where I knew something kind of was off in the beginning. And then I think it takes just a little bit too long, kind of in the middle to gear up, like, you know, to the crazy climax, which we can talk about. So for me, like I the performances are great. I love, like I said, John Carroll Lynch. I think, yeah, it's like the perfect creepy vibe. It was perfect casting. Yeah, but for me, it just felt the arc could have been a little cleaner in terms of ratcheting up the tension. And I mean, literally from the get-go, before they even get to the party, and there's a scene involving an animal, you kind of know shit's not gonna go down well.
that's a pretty big foreshadowing moment. Yeah.
So I think the tone of the movie is well done. Like it's certainly her intention to kind of have that unsettling tone. But for me, the kind of suspense and mystery was kind of sucked out a little bit because of her laying down that tone so early on. Whereas if it was something, I know Coherence, it's a completely different movie, but in that film, I was kind of more invested because I was guessing what would happen. And with here, I kind of knew from the get-go, it was kind of clear that, okay, things are going to get crazy. And they do, to the film's credit, get crazier than I thought they would. And I was definitely surprised at the ending, and it stuck with me since seeing this, like 2 months ago, I think I saw it. And so, solid movie. Not among my favorite of the year, but definitely recommended. Just has some issues kind of with the arc and the pacing of it.
Oh boy.
Uh-oh.
I always hate being the most negative person.
No, you don't. Shut up.
I prefer to be the guy who really likes the film, like Triple Nine, because I'm so...
Oh, you don't like that either.
What are you talking... I love Triple Nine.
No, but I'm saying you don't like... I don't think being the only dissenting opinion in that case.
I always enjoy being the dissenting opinion. I find it easier to defend a film that I like more than everyone else than a film that I dislike more than everyone else.
It's definitely more fun with three varying degrees of opinions.
Well, yeah. So we have super positive Amanda, sort of positive Jordan, and then I'm pretty negative Brian.
Ooh.
And then you're the baby bear? Which one is the cold one? Is that Papa Bear?
I don't know. Which is, I guess...
I need to revisit
Jordan
Goldilocks.
Would be the one who's just right. So listener Goldilocks might find, you know, Baby Bear Jordan to be the one that they're going to stick with. Just because I don't feel like this movie has enough going in any department to really make me feel too strongly about it. But upon reflecting on it, I definitely am more negative than anything else. I mean...
Okay.
I'll just put it this way. Any movie that starts off with someone like... mortally injuring an animal and then having to bludgeon it to death is going to have to work pretty hard to make me think that this is like anything other than like a film student's first script.
Mm.
And it never rebounds. Why did I almost say that?
Rebounds.
It never rebounds from that tone because it's just like, okay. So I think the problem that I have is, when a movie starts with that level of symbolism and dread, it needs to keep that and lean into that tone and not go for a sort of faux realism thing. Like, not that any of these characters act realistically, because if they did, the movie would be 15 minutes long. Like, there's no reason for any of these people to stick around in this house as long as they do. Except that the script demands it. And as far as, like, a thriller needs to ratchet tension up. So, like, coherence, which this is just going to, unfortunately, like, tied to, even though they're completely different films, just because it's, oh, a bunch of people have a dinner party and shit gets strange. Coherence did a really good job of introducing you to a group of people, letting you understand who everyone was to everyone else, and then building up tension through interpersonal relationships before springing something weird on you. And then using what you knew about the people to make the weirdness even harder to deal with.
Mm. Yes, you said that much better than I did. That was my issue as well.
Thank you. I liken it, you're going to be happy because this isn't a food metaphor, unless you like eating sharks. So... if you're on a boat, let's say you're on a boat.
We need like a bell. Brian's first metaphor of the podcast.
Metaphor number one. All right, so shark metaphor. You're on a boat with a bunch of friends. It's dark out. The moonlight reflecting off the water. And you hear like a slap against the side of the boat. Ooh, what was that?
Is this on the TCM cruise?
Yeah, exactly. You're on the TCM cruise. You hear a slap against the side of the boat.
I'm too busy watching, like, The Thin Man to notice something slapping on the side of the boat.
And you think to yourself, that could be, like, maybe it's a piece of driftwood. Maybe it's just a wave. You know, maybe, you know, you're on the ocean, there's waves. Maybe it's a line from the boat. Or maybe it's a shark. Now, you don't have any reason to think it's a shark other than the fact that you know there are sharks in the ocean. And there's a primal fear of the unknown, and so you immediately go to shark, but you then say, there's literally no reason to think it's a shark. Now, you allow yourself to stay on the boat in a heightened sense of terror because you're trying to logic your way out of the fact that there's a shark in the water. That doesn't work if a shark leaps through the air like a dolphin and winks at you before going back under the water. And that is what this movie does time and again. And all these people are like, ah, it's cool. We can just stay on this boat.
Man, Jaws 18 sounds amazing.
Like, there is a level of, ooh, I don't know, that I can accept people would take. Because humans are really hardwired to just be pleasant and polite and get along and minimize any kind of conflict. This movie goes beyond that point numerous times. And not only that, right. but its hero goes beyond that point so that
yeah.
it just, there's never, I can never feel like these people are logically together. I mean, the gift, you had Gordo the Weirdo, but he was so nice and seemed so harmless. And it really was like such a perfectly modulated character. Because, yeah, you don't like him, but he doesn't really give you a reason not to like him. Like, right. he is just an overly insistent, nice guy.
And, like, we all know people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this movie, almost immediately, it's like, oh, we shouldn't be near these people. And yet everyone's like, meh, I'll stick around.
And I think maybe that, and I think maybe the tone of it, I think you are questioning if the tone of it is really dictated by Will's, if it's kind of a subjective tone that is based on how Will feels toward the situation, because he's so uncomfortable returning to this house where he lived with this woman.
Right. But
and
his
son died. And so I think
the movie doesn't work hard enough.
I think it does.
To make its tone reflect him subtly.
I think he has genuine interest to find out what's kind of going on.
I do. Yeah.
It's that push pull of, should I get the hell out of here? Or I care about this person still, and I want to know really what's happening.
Oh, it didn't seem like he cared about her at all.
I think he did. Well, because it, and I think,
in fact,
like I said, there's
a lot of... I honestly thought that the blonde woman, Claire, was his wife.
Oh, no, I didn't.
When they first hugged, I was like, ooh, that's a really long hug. Ooh, there's something going on between these two still. And then it was like, oh, wait, that's not his ex. And then
maybe
I was
something
just,
happened. We don't know.
No. I guess. But I mean, like, again, like, none of their conversations, none of their interactions happen organically in any way that, like, a human being would interact. So it became super difficult.
I like the I want game. Did you like that?
No.
Oh.
We can get into that in sports.
Because when you're drinking a whole bunch of super expensive, what was it, brandy, wine?
It was wine.
Yeah. You're going to start just playing, like, weirdo, sexy party games.
But no one...
That's what happens.
No one started off, like, tense, and then, like, they all got loose. It was, like, every moment they were just like, eh, let's just go along with it. Like, it didn't feel like they were breaking down barriers. And so when stuff legitimately starts to get weird in every direction, the fact that these people are still calmly sitting there is insanity to me. And, like, I could get over it, and I thought that the ending was cool, but I would have loved it on a better movie.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I was super disappointed because I'm like, The Gift did this better. Coherence did this better. I mean, if you matched up,
Gift.
Well, we know all your feelings about The Gift. And now I know why, because you were waiting for a much worse movie to come along.
Hey,
I was.
No,
so
I mean,
Brian,
I was waiting for a movie that wasn't like, hey guys, rape. Am I right? Cool. Well,
yeah, that didn't, that was a little too much.
That was way
Look,
too much.
We're not
much.
Getting into the ending of The Gift again. We
true.
Already did that.
That's true.
That's okay. Let's move on.
And I
Sorry.
Feel as though I gave the best defense I could. Anyway.
Yes. Anyway.
So my issue with this film is what I've said. The characters don't interact in any way that's human. The tone is too much too soon and doesn't ever recover from that. And the modulation of that tone is also just insanity and doesn't create any tension that ratchets upwards, because you immediately are suspicious of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the second that something happens that should shift the paradigm, they immediately shift back. I actually thought about Queen of Earth during this movie, because it was the same thing. It was, this person is nuts. They've just done something that in any normal world would result in the end of this whole scenario.
Yeah, but in Queen
like,
of Earth...
Eh.
But in Queen of Earth, you didn't have a woman whose son died very suddenly just 2 years before.
Right.
And you would
had
be,
a woman
you
who
would be
was
acting
a
little
a
weird and fragile.
Breakdown. I mean...
Well, I'm just saying you would be acting a little weird and fragile if you were still recovering from that.
But
so,
see, everyone keeps giving her a lot of the benefit of the doubt. But like...
Yeah.
Poor Will. No one seems to give a shit.
No, I think that this film does create a lot of empathy for her, which I actually found very surprising.
Disagree.
Oh, I do. I think it created a lot of empathy for her because as he's walking through the house, there's this like arc where he's sort of revisiting his past with this house, his life. Yeah, but it's also his life with her, so she's involved.
But,
so
okay, we're going to have to get into spoilers to talk about it.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Let's do it.
Okay, jump so we have
let's
super
fully
positive,
open this invitation.
Super positive, totally down to accept the invitation. Jordan Raup, nothing better to do that night. Might as well accept the invitation.
Yeah.
I show up, drink one glass of free booze and leave.
I heard there was going to be tons of wine and sexy party games, so I was there, man.
And cocaine. So yeah, let's get into spoilers. Let's spoil this thing. So it turns out that the invitation is not only the name of an ornate paper card that was sent to these people to invite them to this house. It is also something to do with a cult. I don't know if the cult is named the invitation. I don't know if it's theology
is
the invitation. Yeah. I don't know if it's process is the invitation. Perhaps it's
called
all three of those.
The group itself, I think, is called the invitation.
Okay.
Yeah, the group is called the invitation.
Now, I've been watching a show on Hulu called The Path.
Oh yeah.
Did you continue watching that?
Yeah, I'm
pretty much done. I watched the first episode.
Okay.
Does it get better?
I thought the first episode was good. No. I feel it has continued to get good.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know. It depends on what your problem with it was. The reason I asked about the invitation is because in the nomenclature of that show, the cult is Meyerism. Their theology is known as the Path, and their like ultimate goal is like going into the light. So it was. I was wondering if the invitation was the name of the cult or the initiation rite or whatever. But anyway, this is a cult that seeks to free people from grief and sadness and guilt through basically helping them to not care, just give it up to the world and decide to feel better. Basically a super advanced form of denial.
Right.
And the entire point of this party has been to, I guess, be a murder-suicide with a bunch of people who didn't know that it was going to be a murder-suicide.
No.
So,
man, poor Troy.
Yeah, poor Troy finally shows up at this party.
He didn't even get to finish his dinner, I don't think.
No, I don't believe he did. Now, Will is like wandering around. He's freaking out. They obviously haven't ever really dealt with the death of their son. He's still working through it. A lot of post-traumatic stress disorder imagery in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows something's wrong. He's the only person who believes that something is wrong. He screams that something is wrong. He's proven incorrect at that point. Comes back in, screams it again. This time he's right. Manson-style murder happens. And then it turns out that even though him and Kira, who at this point have maybe had two lines together through the whole film,
right,
are still alive. And Tom, one half of the gay couple that was there, miraculously still alive, seems to teleport from one room to another. And then they realize that this red lantern that had been lit all night is actually some sort of signal. And they can see red lanterns hung all over the hills as sirens and helicopters swirl around. A chilling ending, completely
so
unearned by this film.
Oh, so earned. So good.
I thought it was pretty awesome.
It doesn't.
So badass.
I'm just wondering if like any of those parties were more interesting than this one.
The invitation, like, too. It's coming.
Yeah, like if I would love it if they allowed other filmmakers to take a crack at this.
Ooh.
And just be like, okay, now you tell a story in a different, like, mid-century modern house.
So it'd be kind of like The Purge, except not completely heavy-handed and garbage.
Yeah, no.
So far, the only person I've heard that wants to continue this franchise is someone that hates the movie.
I know.
No, because it's an interesting idea.
This concept
of a cult that doesn't just want to murder its own members, but also wants to murder other people.
Well, because
presumably for a good reason.
Well, I think it's just a method of their conversion. Like, the way they convert you is by
murdering you?
Well, because the way they think about it is the only way to really, like, free yourself from pain is through death. So they're like, we want to give you this gift of being able to be freed from your pain because you're all of our good friends. But I'm not saying that Brian, I'm not saying that cults make sense.
But the thing is that a cult,
we needed a cult defender on
the
show.
Some kind of internal sense.
Where's Bill when you need him?
Like in The Leftovers, the cults there make a kind of internal sense. It is a horrifying sense.
I think this makes sense.
But like,
I mean, okay, I think it does. I think it makes total sense. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to defend it.
Because in The Leftovers, you have the guilty remnant who wear white and smoke all the time to force people into grief or emptiness, or, you know, just to make them remember and make them realize that the world is not going on. The world has effectively ended and you're all just stuck on the aftermath. And all of their plans are horrible.
No, they're not great.
No, they're great plans, but they're really mean.
Yeah.
And that tells you something about them. And the fact that they're cool with themselves dying, but they want to harm everyone else is even more chilling. In The Path, they have an internal logic that actually helps them to gain members in a believable way. This, like, he says he's going to tell them why these people would join this cult, and then he just shows them a video of a woman dying.
Well, and the thing, I will say this, I know that there are flaws in this film. I think the biggest one is the house guest, that very visibly insane woman.
Sadie?
Yeah, was that her name?
Yes.
She
played
did not need to
Lindsay
be in this
Burge.
Movie. Yeah, she did not need to be in this movie.
You need the unpredictable sex pot.
Yeah, she was not good.
you can't have a cult without weird sex stuff.
Yeah, I think it was just. I think that definitely sort of watered the movie down a little bit for me. Not enough. I obviously enjoyed it very thoroughly, but I'm willing to overlook her, and I'm willing to overlook some of the other flaws in this film, just because I just found it so incredibly riveting. But
I also think
that this is, as much as I'm calling it a thriller, I think it really is more traditionally a horror movie. And I think cultivating that tone of dread from the very beginning makes complete sense. And if you're looking at it from a genre standpoint,
I don't know. To me, this was like if I was hanging out with a friend and every once in a while, one of them just picked up a gun and swung it around the room and then put it down and said, all right, that was the last time.
But I like the way they justify it by saying, like, hey, man, it's L.A. People are weird in L.A.
Yeah, I guess. But, like, these aren't people who are not from L.A. who could.
No.
They should still know that even for L.A., this is a little fucked up.
I don't know.
This movie would make a great double feature. There's a film I saw at Sundance called Holy Hell. The trailer just came out today, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have heard of this movie yet. It comes out next month. But it a guy who was the official videographer for this cult for 22 years. So he had just an obscene amount of footage, made a documentary about it. And
nice.
I will just say, obviously, there's no like killing or anything. But it is it's believable after you see The Invitation. Some of the things that can happen.
Oh yeah,
but
you have to think about some of the absolutely bonkers, off the wall things that cults are based on. I mean, it's not like, I think this is probably one of the more believable cults like in films. I don't see anything unbelievable about this cult or unconvincing.
I don't really have any problem with it being unbelievable that the cult exists, because yeah, people followed stupid shit all the time.
Right.
I have trouble with people staying at this dinner party.
Yeah. Well, it was almost like, yeah, it almost kind of reminded me of when you were in middle school and you had that friend who was like, hey man, have you ever watched Faces of Death? And you're like,
yeah, but you're in middle school. I mean, like,
I grew up in the sticks, man.
No, I mean, I had that friend.
Okay, good. I was like, am I the only one?
That's not the type of thing that, like,
it is also Los Angeles, so there's a lot of emotionally stunted.
Yeah.
So yes, they're all still technically middle schoolers. I think
you're underestimating how weird people are in LA.
My main problem remains that I couldn't believe that this thing was still happening.
Oh, I could.
Even if those
did you see that spread? Did you see that food?
It was my fiance said,
you could show me a video of like a
my fiance said, wait, they hadn't eaten yet? Is that food ice cold? No one has been cooking.
That's true.
It's like it was sitting in the oven. I don't know.
It's only a 99-minute movie. I mean,
I don't know. I just like, you know, I had a lot of problems with it. I couldn't believe that it was still going on, and you have to give me a reason to believe it. And
oh, I 100% believed.
And it, well, that
I believe Brian
you and what you are willing to suffer through for a free meal.
I love it.
So I just like, I couldn't get behind it. It was
it would be one thing if it was okay. So you have to think these are friends who hadn't seen each other in 2 years. And most of them are, I mean, as the one schlubby character out of all of these gorgeous people in this group is basically just, you can tell he's there because he would rather be there than at home with his wife and kids. Like, he's just miserable with his life. So that's probably why he stays. I think that there are justifiable reasons why they stay. And also, it's just, you know, they're drunk and they're doing coke and they're, you
one
know.
Person is doing
I think we just need to take this to its natural conclusion and take a 2-year break from the podcast and then I'll host a dinner party.
Yes.
And we'll inject some fun and see what happens.
Inject some fun?
Some invitation-esque fun.
Oh my God. It's so hard for me to get over that. And then for the movie to continuously try to connect it to this, you know, honestly, it's a sad story. The kid's head accidentally got hit by a baseball bat and he died.
Yeah, that was another flaw in the movie where I was like, I kind of have to overlook that. Because I thought that was a weird,
fucking ridiculous story about how his
kid died. They could have come up with something a little bit better.
They could have, like, the kid falling over and just hitting his head on something would have been better.
Yeah.
Like, did the kid murder him purposefully?
Yeah, I mean, the way they, it almost
maybe
sounded
it was, maybe
like
it was a cult member.
That's a good point.
Oh my God. Was it, what's his face?
Oh yeah, the little, one of the other kids. Or,
was it Toby Huss? Did Toby Huss kill that kid?
Yeah, Toby Huss.
Like a baby Toby Huss?
I just like, I don't, and, you know, a movie like this that talks about guilt and regret after someone dies and the lingering pain and, you know, people being seduced by an easy way to get away from it, that should really be working for me. Because
I thought it did an excellent job with it. I thought it did an amazing job with it, because there's that scene, like the scene where he's like, I want to go to his room, and he goes into his son's room and all of his toys and his bed are laid out and he lays on the bed and then his son appears. I was in tears.
But that wasn't real.
No, of course it wasn't real, Brian.
So that's a...
For fuck's sake.
He's standing in the middle of this office and thinking about that. But here's the thing.
Yes, I know, Brian. I realize it's all in his head.
You can't expect me to empathize or understand someone's pain if you are denying me the reason behind that pain. So by holding back until,
I don't know,
like,
that kid was pretty cute.
Until the last 15 minutes about he feels bad for giving them a baseball bat. I mean, that's a dumb reason, but if I'd known that first, at least I would have an anchor point around which to put all of this behavior of his. You don't gain anything from me having to wait to find out specifically why this guy feels guilty, because without a reason, I just get tired of his shit.
Oh, no, I didn't.
No, I'm like, you have to let me know what I'm looking at here. Like, it doesn't,
but I don't think, but
I'm not
going
to feel innately sad for this guy. I need to know what's going on. I need his emotional mind frame to be clearly dictated to me so that I can understand why he's responding this way.
Oh, so you want the film to, like, pander to you?
No, I want the film to tell me its story.
But
this is a twist.
It is,
that
Brian.
Shouldn't be a twist.
It is telling you. I don't understand.
Jordan,
I don't.
Jordan, do you feel that it was worth it for this movie to hold back the way that this child had died and why he particularly blames himself for it?
I don't think that was the most important aspect of the film.
It's just,
You're
Wait,
focusing
I asked
on
Jordan
one
question.
Character.
I would rather
than flip the killing of the dog or what coyote aspect and reveal that later and then put this up front. Yes, that would have been a better arc, a more smoother arc, I think, for sure. Like it's weird what they revealed early and what they didn't and what they waited to reveal. If that
I don't think it was a super amazing twist, but I wasn't waiting for that. Like that wasn't.
That's the other thing. It's like from the get go that obviously something bad happened. There wasn't. Yeah. You know, those flashbacks aren't going to lead to something nice.
There's a reason that kid isn't at this party.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I needed.
You didn't
to
get
know
a babysitter.
Was, yeah. I just think it. I don't think that that was the most. I don't think that that was a crucial.
No,
aspect
I think
of this film
holding,
knowing
holding that back. Cripples this film emotionally.
Oh, you are so wrong, Brian. You are so 100% wrong. Oh.
Brian, did you at least like the scene where he starts smashing the glasses?
Oh, I love that.
Table? I thought that was a great moment.
No, because I'd already seen him freak out before. I knew he was going to do it again.
But
I
here's
mean,
the
like,
thing.
There's nothing there. It's not like this guy has had a slow unraveling. He's literally already blown up at least one time before.
So
people aren't allowed to blow up twice in Brian's movies.
No, absolutely.
Oh, I'm
not.
Sorry. Let's get Bill on here and see how many times we're allowed to see people in trunks. No, you can't ratchet up the tension, release it.
No, that is not the same.
Very
that is a cliche,
ratchet it up
Brian.
Again.
That is a cliche you're talking about. No,
no,
here's what I okay.
There's something,
I'm just,
wrong, there's something wrong with this. I just,
I'm just
like
gonna,
I can't believe
I'm just
you don't
gonna,
see it.
I'm just gonna talk over you because I wanna just say this before I forget it, because one of the things that I find interesting about this film is because I think it is adding to this trend that has been going on with films now where, and we've talked about this with The Witch, and I think it's also with 10 Cloverfield Lane, and there's probably some other examples that I haven't seen yet, but I think it's this idea of you're always questioning, is this really what this is? It's like, it can't really be what it is. And then in the end, it's like, oh no, that's literally what it is.
I don't think that The Witch does that at all.
The Witch totally does that.
No, The Witch is 100% upfront about everything
no, the
that's
witch,
happening.
Because I
it's,
think The
it's
Witch...
It's upfront about the witch herself, but it's not upfront about how the other characters will be involved with it.
No, I think you are made to question the beginning of The Witch, whether... Yeah. That thing that we see in the woods is actually real, or if it's just what the family's just imagining the worst case scenario, and you find out in the end. I don't want to spoil The Witch because you guys know how. Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it in case anybody hasn't seen it yet. But you know what I mean.
No way that is not meant to be taken as objective truth in The Witch.
No,
it's filmed in such a surrealist way that it.
No, I don't.
Jordan
disagrees.
Jordan
fully
has spoken.
With that reading.
it's been 16 months since I've seen it, but
it's filmed in a way that the rest of the film is filmed. That's too many times saying film in this
anyways.
Sentence. No,
the filmy
the witch,
film.
The witch never lets you doubt for a second that there is a witch there. That is part of the point of
yes,
the witch.
Yes, it does. You are. I think you are made to doubt.
I think
you are made
as
to
a
think
modern
that,
movie viewer.
Because oh my god, I was just making a point,
that.
Dude. Never mind.
Let Amanda talk, Brian.
Go for it.
I was just saying. I think that it does keep in this theme of these films that are coming out. Probably like over the last couple years of making you question, because I think it was before, and I know we talked about this in The Witch too, was probably, I would say like maybe 10 plus years ago, if a movie would make you question, oh, this would make you think, oh, this is real. This is really what's happening. And then there would be a twist at the end to show you like, oh no, it's all in the character's head, or oh no, it was actually this thing. Whereas like there are all these movies coming out where it's like, oh no, this is what's actually happening. Like, you're not wrong. And yes. I just think that's interesting. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of like cultural, I just think there's a lot of interpretation that could be mined from it.
I concur. I agree with what you've said 100%. I disagree
Thank you,
with
Brian.
One of your objects 100%.
Well, almost like you're saying like our worst fears are true.
They are true. Yeah.
Well, that's like the ending of Cloverfield Lane, 10 Cloverfield Lane. I mean,
full title, please. It can get confusing.
10 Cloverfield Lane, I agree, Amanda, plays that game 100% and does it super well. That is an effective tense. Like, that's the movie where I was doing the handshaky thing.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't do that.
Well, whether or not
it tips its hand way too early.
Because, like I said, I think the tone is so strong because it does make you question, oh, is this really just all in Will's head? Is this all just really, we're just seeing it through his sort of like emotional lens? Like, he's so stressed out right now.
Well, I think you brought up that this is really a horror movie, whereas I wouldn't necessarily classify, and maybe it is with this, the revealing the cards too early thing, because 10 Cloverfield Lane, I wouldn't really classify that as a horror film per se. Because
right.
I think it thrills you because it's intense all the time. Whereas in a horror movie, you know something horrible is going to happen, and this is maybe defined by that because you do know, like Brian is saying, and I'm kind of saying from the beginning, that these horror elements will come in because it happens so early.
Yeah,
is that the only? I mean, is that your definition of a horror movie per se?
Yeah, because I think with a horror movie, you want to like right out of the gate. Like, communicate to people, oh, something bad's going to happen.
There's a shark in the water.
There's a shark in the water.
There's a shark flying above your boat.
And it winks right before.
There's a shark soaring above the TCM.
That's one of the reasons that, to my mind, The Witch, despite not being scary in the way that people were expecting it to be, is a horror film because you know somewhere out in those woods that witch is waiting and watching.
I really hope we didn't spoil anything for people listening to this, because I feel like...
The Witch is the highest grossing independent movie of the year, I think enough people...
I hope. I'm sorry if I did.
I don't think we've spoiled it, because it happens in the first 5 minutes, and it's super clear there's a witch.
All right, go listen to our podcast on that.
So anyway, I had something else to say about this film. Oh, I understand what you're saying about creating this sense of uncertainty in young William's mind. The issue is that with everyone continuing to act so normal all the time, and he brings this up himself, he's like, why is everyone so cool with this? There's obviously something wrong. And I was like, you're damn right, Will. And then I started thinking, oh my God, is he the only one who's not in on this?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
Because
holy crap.
That's the only way this makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that is such an important point. Oh my God. I can't believe I forgot about that.
Right. And so he's like flipping out and says, like, where's Choi? You know, I got a message from Choi. And I was like, oh my God, everyone knows. Like, I kept thinking, like, okay, one person in each of these couples is part of this and the other one's not, and they're all going to murder the non-believers. And I was like, oh, they already killed Choi because he showed up early. And then, nope, Choi shows up and everyone's like, Will, you need to go outside for a second. And he's like, yeah, I'll meander around this house for another 20 minutes until I can flip out again. And then it turns out that, no, it was just those four people. There is no greater twist there. And everyone else was just way too polite. Way too polite to be like, yeah, this is fucked up.
Yeah, and I will say that the cell phone thing, I feel bad for people writing. I just feel bad for anybody writing around cell phones, because it just sucks trying to find a way to just write any movie, to just write any book without being like, oh, fuck, what do I do with this cell phone?
The crazy thing is that this movie doesn't even have to do that, because there's no reason for anyone to have to call out except to find Choi and then just say, he's not answering his phone.
Nah.
Because he's not. You know, he comes in, he's like, I'm at work. You know, he could say, my phone died. I was at work. I left it somewhere, blah, blah, blah. You know, it would have even been better if, like, he had dropped it in the parking lot and the guy had found it when it rang and was like, why is Choi's phone here? Huh? And then Choi walks in. He's like, dude, got called into work, put the phone on top of the car to unlock it. I guess it must have slid right off. Are we going to have some poison wine or what? But instead, you know, it's just, and I hate to bill it up on this, because he's usually the person who nitpicks actual story points that, you know, you should just be able to gloss over. But there's just a lot of that in this, and it's it's fatal for me anyway. Again, especially when they start trying to add in this whole thing about, like, you know, at the end when the cultists are trying to murder everyone, Eden finally is like, I don't know about this. I don't think this is right. And David's all like, no, we're going to kill them, and we're, you know, we'll see them all later. Like, this is how we get free when we go to the after place. And I guess she finally realizes after shooting Will in the arm that it's not going to make her feel better. So she shoots herself in the stomach. And then she's like, I'm sorry.
Ruin that beautiful, beautiful dress.
Yeah.
I mean, I cried. Just, I cried at that.
Did you?
No, with the dress.
Oh, God. Oh, I thought you. Amanda cried both in the emotional terms of the movie and because that beautiful, beautiful dress. That
beautiful dress. I was actually, it's funny. I was watching, I think it's Foxy Brown, and there's a like a psychedelic dance number during the credits at the beginning of that movie. And no joke, there is a woman wearing that exact same dress in the intro to Foxy Brown.
So we've got the dress from Foxy Brown.
Yeah.
The dinner party from Coherence. The house from The Gift.
Yep. It's a perfect movie.
Here's the thing. Like, if any movie about the lengths people will go to escape from grief and guilt should affect, like, if ever there's a moment where a movie like that's going to affect me, it's literally going to be between right now and tomorrow.
Wait.
And the fact that this movie...
Is your babe coming?
What? No. Wait, it's the 9-year anniversary of a friend, like, my best friend from childhood killing himself. I should be an easy lay for this movie. Because... Ever since that has happened, I have had to wrestle with an overwhelming sense of loss and guilt because I have earnestly believed since it happened that it was my choices that directly led to that. Much like William, why do we keep calling him William? Will, in
I don't
this
know why.
Movie, apparently feels those feels. It's just, but he's, again,
no,
because
I don't
have that anchor, it's not working. And because they try to smash it in at the end, it doesn't feel cathartic. It doesn't feel like Eden is finally realizing the wrongness of her cult, and it doesn't feel like this is going to be a cathartic thing for him either.
I think there's something. When you go into a movie, you have to ask, what am I demanding of this movie, and what does this movie demand of me? And I think maybe you're demanding a little too much of this movie in terms of just what you expected from it. I mean, this is just a straight up, like, amazing, intense thriller. I don't think that it's necessarily trying to, I mean, it definitely has, like, some great emotional beats, but I don't think that it's trying to go down that path.
I don't know. For a movie that has him drive Kira away by saying, I love you, but you can't help me, and then ends with them grasping hands when they realize that, like, this kind of shit's happening all over the world.
I mean,
that's
so great.
Visual storytelling that should tell me that he is on the road to healing.
Well,
but it doesn't.
But I think it's saying, like, you don't have the luxury to be sad because the world is falling apart. So
that's,
you need to buck up and, like,
every episode of The Leftovers does that better than this show or
but
this movie.
I think it's fine. I don't think it's trying to, like, tug at your heartstrings.
All right. Well, apparently, if you want to,
maybe I'm just ovulating, and that's
hard.
Why I'm crying.
That's another podcast.
I almost walked right into that question. are you?
I don't know. I don't know how that works. I'm so sorry.
Oh, man.
Happy Alien Day, everyone.
Yeah, happy Alien Day. Go out, get your men's size Ripley's Alien Stomper shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to tell anyone who's not interested in this movie to not watch it. But, I mean, I can't even say that I came into it with an expectation because I didn't know anything about it beyond basically what I said right at the start of this review.
Yeah.
So I was picking up the vibes of the movie and what it appeared to be trying to do, and every promise and every illusion and everything that it kind of made me feel like it wanted to do, it did not do successfully.
Okay.
So that's it. That's a good way for me to end my thoughts. Jordan, Amanda, any final thoughts?
No, I think we exhausted every aspect of this movie.
I will say, okay. So my husband is very bald, and after watching this movie, he tweeted something to the effect of, it's like, I'm fine with being bald, but after watching The Invitation, I want beautiful long hair. Because, man, the hair in this movie is out of control.
Oh, my God. Logan Marshall Green and Michael Huseman have some great, great fucking hair.
It's beautiful. Beautiful hair in this movie.
The best hair. Every time that they flashed back to the happier time and he was clean shaven, I was like, Logan Marshall Green, you grow that beard out right this instant.
Such a lumber sexual? I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Lumber sexual is like lumberjacky. These guys were more like, I don't know, 70s street buskers.
I work at a tech firm and wear a linen suit that's like purposefully wrinkled.
Yeah,
that's
much.
Cool now. Yeah.
You said that this was a well-acted movie, right?
I would say that, yes.
Firmly disagree.
Ooh.
Didn't even have time to get to that. I will say that like Toby Huss, John Carroll Lynch, Logan Marshall Green, Tammy... and Michael acquit themselves well. Almost everyone else is a nightmare.
I thought everybody was great.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
That sums up our...
it's a final disagreement we can have.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, The Invitation is out now on VOD, so you can get six friends together to watch it. Only spend $1. Why wouldn't you do that? It's a cheap evening.
Yeah.
Open some good wine. That is all for today. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Why don't we tell them where we can be found in the meantime? Jordan Rao.
Yes, on thefilmstage.com and at JP Rao. And check out our Instagram and Facebook pages.
All right.
We have an Instagram?
Yeah, we just launched it.
We have an Instagram.
At the film stage.
Okay.
All right. Amanda Waltz.
I am on Twitter at Media Waltz, also on Letterboxd, Media Waltz, and you could also check out my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find me on Letterboxd at Brian J. Rowan. You can find my personal Instagram. I don't know why you'd want that. At the same, really, I'm super uninventive when it comes to coming up with screen names for stuff.
And go see Green Room.
Yeah,
that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Green Room next time. It is expanding again this weekend.
Yeah, it didn't do amazing, really... but so it might change their plans. But yeah, it's supposed to expand further this weekend.
Okay.
Fantabulous. All right, well, that's a new film by Jeremy Saulnier. Well, we didn't go over how to say his name 12 times before this podcast began. Look for it, find it, watch it. We are talking about it next week. Between now and then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Tune in next time.
The one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always take the sweetest rose and crush it till the petals.